I'm Indy Todd. Welcome to The Point. Later in the hour, we sit down with WCAI's news director and reporters to discuss our ongoing series In the Shadow of Extinction, the effort to save the North Atlantic right whale. But first, the reestablishment of a New Bedford institution, the Lyceum, a place for learning through intellectual debate. Joining us to discuss the history of the New Bedford Lyceum and plans for its future are Bob Unger from Unger LeBlanc Communications. Good morning, Bob.
Good morning, Indy.
And Lee Blake, president of the New Bedford Historical Society. Good morning, Lee.
Good morning.
All right, so Lee, the New Bedford Lyceum was first established in 1828. So give us a sense of what the city of New Bedford was like during that period.
Well, the city of New Bedford was an astounding place, first of all, because whaling had all kinds of funds and money. We had the great founders of the city who had been, you know, involved in whaling for a good 40 years by then. And all that money was coming into the city. So there was a lot of buildings going up, fancy places. But at the same point in time, there was a real moral quality to everything because the Quakers, who actually kind of were the captains of industry at that time, also had a moral piece to that. So while the money was coming in, people wanted to make sure that the population was educated well, that people were having civil discussions about some of the issues and politics of the day. And the issues and politics of the day were abolition and the end of slavery. So New Bedford is a pretty exciting place at that point in time.
Yeah. So who founded the Lyceum and what were the goals for the organization?
The Lyceum was founded by a group of men, of course, at that time. That's what you would have. But they were, you know, the captains of industry. So Charles W. Morgan, and we all know the Morgan ship from Mystic, Connecticut. Joseph Condon, who actually was an abolitionist and was saving papers of African Americans at the time. Samuel Rodman, Thomas Roach, and William Tabor, all who were involved in the organization of the Quaker and the Friends Meeting House in the area, but also were strong abolitionists. Mm. So you had people who had this whole moral compass about ending enslavement in this country and how were they going to work on those issues. And New Bedford also had a strong African-American population. So a city of about 11,000 at the time, New Bedford was, it had 1,000 people of color who were free. And those people were advocates, activists, and they worked hand-in-hand with the white abolitionists to move the city forward progressively.
Yeah, and so the city had quite a history with the Underground Railroad. There's actually some walking tours I think we've done stories on that today that people can learn about,
more about
that history. All right, so were most of the conversations then about ending slavery, or did they talk about other things?
They were about a lot of different things. So initially, the first Lyceum is actually a lecture on science. So it's interesting to hear we're still dealing with what's the impact of science. Yeah. So the Lyceum really was put together so that information could be shared and people could have conversations about the thoughts and feelings of the day. And at this point in time in 1828 when they do the first one, it's on science. And when you look at the list of people, you had science, you had politics. Abraham Lincoln speaks at the Lyceum when he's a representative, not when he's running. He actually comes in town to lobby for somebody else. But you have poets. Charles Dickens came to the Lyceum to talk about his writing and about England. You had Frederick Douglass, who spoke at the Lyceum four times over a period of 20 years. Mm-hmm. Because people, in order to really change the way individuals thought about issues, in those days there were lectures and talks all the time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So was there a specific building for this when it started?
There was a specific building. And unfortunately, that building burned down. But we had the Lyceum, and there also was Liberty Hall. And both of those buildings were in downtown New Bedford, were accessible, and held speeches and talks on a regular basis. And initially, the Lyceum was segregated, and that black people were not allowed to go, and women were not allowed to go.
That's like my next question was going to be that. So when did that change?
Well, it changes really just about 1830. So about 4 years after the Lyceum is set up. If you're going to have, first of all of these people who kind of founded our abolitionists, And then you're going to invite abolitionist speakers. William Lloyd Garrison also speaks there. They start to say, we're not going to speak if you're not allowing people of color in there.
So were the people who attended in the beginning pretty much all from the same walks of life?
Yes,
or were they,
yes.
They were. So,
yes,
so
yes.
You didn't, so you, maybe poor people weren't allowed in too?
Right,
yeah,
right.
Yeah. So look at listening to this, we're talking about the question of science, civil conversation. So Bob, that kind of brings us like today. We're you know, that's something we're still struggling with, aren't we?
It sure is. And in fact, it was one of the reasons why we decided to try to resurrect this institution, which existed in New Bedford for just about 75 years into the early 20th century. And it had been, as Lee said, a place where, you know, ideas came to kind of find consensus and so on. And the great issues of the day were topics of conversation, as well as a lot of stuff that, you know, I mean, Herman Melville once spoke there on Roman statuary.
Right, right.
And he wasn't speaking about whaling or on abolition or whatever. But I first thought about, you know, doing this in New Bedford after I was out at the Chautauqua Institution in Western Pennsylvania, Western New York, which is a Victorian village that still exists on a lake, and each summer brings together, you know, people to take sort of a vacation of the mind, and they come and they sometimes tackle, you know, great issues and so on, and then they go back home. And it occurred to me that there was something in that New Bedford and Massachusetts, again, you know, could learn from, resurrect. Once were 100 chapters, more than 100 chapters in Massachusetts. Mm-hmm. And it was a place which provided entertainment and education. I think it was the Lyceum movement originally came from the French labor movement. And during the industrialization period, the work was so deadening, and the French were only, you know, 20, 30 years after the revolution, and they feared social unrest again. And I believe probably the Lyceum was a pressure release valve for them, and it was exported to the United States. And so, you know, if I spent 10 years as the editor of the Standard Times, which is the newspaper in New Bedford, and one of the things that, you know, we sought to do was to shed light rather than heat whenever possible. And it occurred to, you know, to me after, you know, spending as much time as I do on my phone following mm-hmm. Twitter and so on, that really 140 characters just couldn't do this justice. So some of us pulled together a group, a steering committee, which includes a lot of nonprofits in the community, my old paper, the Standard Times, and others, who together we sit down with and plot out who do we want to bring in for conversation to invite people to have civic discourse.
Yeah. And that's a question, because there's a lot of choices, aren't there, when you think about who would we like to speak? I imagine you've got a pretty big list.
Yes. There are plenty of people out there that would make attractive speakers, and hopefully over the years we'll tap many of them. Our first, last year, our first speaker was Bob Woodward, and he came along at a time which the Trump presidency was brand new. The question of the power of the presidency and the role of free press in serving as a check on the power of the presidency was very topical. And you know, we were thrilled that we managed to sell out the Zeiterion Theater for the Performing Arts in New Bedford, which is about 1,200 seats, I think. Mm-hmm. Is that right, Lee?
Yes.
And you know, so this year's speaker, is Gloria Steinem, whom we look for people that are well known, that are likely to draw interest, but we also look for people that are speaking on topics that are important, mm-hmm. given the important, necessary conversation that's happening in our country today on gender, on sexual harassment and sex discrimination and so on. It seemed to be a very good choice. And Gloria Steinem sold out within 2 weeks.
Yeah. You know, yeah, so, I think even without the movie, she'd be an interesting person to yeah, listen to. Yeah. So why did the original Lyceum end? What happened? What created that?
Well, just petered out. Mm-hmm. You know, over the years, people have different focuses. You know, as we talk about the Lyceum, we also talk about the TEDx.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there are those kind of movements where people want to come together and share ideas. And with the Lyceum, you know, at the end of the 19th century, people were moving on to other things. Yeah. At one point in time, there were 3,000 Lyceums across the country.
My goodness.
So,
yeah.
Yeah.
And, you know, in the old Tensha talk was that used to, they were sort of part religious revival and part political gathering and education and entertainment. And I want to say about 1920, there were about 75% of the people in the United States attended one or more of those tent Chautauquas. So, but radio came along, mm-hmm, and people had other means of communication. And as rural America was electrified and, you know, and social and economic changes took place, I think that they turned to other, you know, other interests.
Yeah. Yeah. Now, so these are some big names, and speakers can charge some pretty big fees, right? So how are you able to pay for this?
The economic model is is pretty much driven by you know, what we charge in terms of ticket prices, and we have, you know, I think it's three different levels of price, and we do have the Kearney Family Foundation, which is our sole, you know, foundation support, and they give us some money to handle administration and marketing and such. But the rest is driven exclusively, yeah, you know, by ticket sales. And we did not want to turn this into a commercial,
right,
you know, platform.
So going forward, what's the thought then on funding this, you know, so that obviously ticket prices, you know, I'm sure you'd like to have some free seats too, right?
We do have some free
seats. Oh, you do? Oh, yeah. Good. Okay.
So, for instance, we're talking about the Kearney Family Foundation. You know, we do see moving forward having a mix of some funders, mm-hmm, as we develop our marketing and we become more of a commodity. You can think about sending out grant applications and getting small amounts of funding that really translate into students being able to go. Mm-hmm. Sometimes the university, for instance, purchases a block of tickets, so then students are able to go from the university. But it's kind of putting that mix together, so you're doing some funding, some focus on buying tickets, especially for low-income or student populations, mm-hmm, our students, our high school students as well as college students, right, but putting that model together.
Mm. Now, Bob, you talked about kind of these conversations of getting this thing started again and different organizations partnering for this. So who have you got? What organizations are part of all of this?
Okay, so Lee, I'm likely to forget at least three or four of them.
So you've got quite a few.
Well, let's see. So I mentioned the Standard Times, mm-hmm, and the Historical Society. The city of New Bedford provides some backing mm-hmm, organizational support. The Community Foundation of Southeastern Massachusetts, the Chamber of Commerce, the Zeiterion Center for the Performing Arts,
Leadership,
the
New Bedford South Coast.
Leadership South Coast, and the New Bedford Whaling Museum. Am I forgetting anybody?
Wow.
And if I am, to any of my partner organizations,
and the Marion Institute.
Uh-huh. And the Marion Institute is a new partner as well.
Okay,
yes.
So when you've got a group like that, quite a few people, are they also part of the decision as to what programs you're going to have?
And all? Yes.
So
it's very collective.
I was going to say,
yeah,
that's interesting, yeah, because, you know, when you get a group of people, it's hard to get everybody to agree to say, you know.
So is
there some civil debate going on in those conversations?
Yes, yes. And I do a lot of the work as a historical society. We do a lot of work collaborating with people on arts and culture. So we really do have in the city of New Bedford this whole belief that if we work together, we can leverage assets. We don't have a lot of money, but all of us kind of partner and we're able to pull together a pot of money to do very interesting things.
Yes. Yeah.
And I think that's kind of a philosophy that many of us have. And yes, there's some, you know, dissension, but usually people come together and make decisions.
Right.
When we decided on Gloria Steinem, you know, we have to do these things a year in advance. It's not like we saw the Me Too movement
right.
coming down the road. It just happened.
The timing
that way.
Was great. Yeah.
Yes,
yeah.
That's right.
So you're doing it once a year now. What's the hope? Are you hoping to do it more often?
Yes. I mean, our goal would be next year to expand to twice a year. And we think that that is going to take a new economic model with some foundation support. Longer term, you know, there are other organizations in Massachusetts and the region that have managed to do this successfully. One is the Springfield Forum, which has been around since about 1920. And, you know, that's a membership-based organization, and they've managed to make a go out of it for a very long time. We would like this to be a place where we can bring top shelf speakers on a range of subjects of importance and get people to attend. Now, not everyone is likely to fill the Zeiterion Center for the Performing Arts, but we also, you know, have used, as we did last year, the New Bedford Whaling Museum, which has a smaller auditorium and served as a screening for the movie All the President's Men in advance of Woodward's visit. So we do want to grow. We do want this to be a sustainable model, and it's going to take, you know, I think some execution economically and perhaps, organizationally for us to do that.
You mentioned having some seats for students and things, and that got me to thinking about, I don't know if maybe you are already collaborating with schools and some youth groups or something. You know, the younger generation, they have a tendency to, you know, be focused on the screens, you know, the phones, and I don't even know if they use laptops anymore. Pretty much their phones, and not so much engaged in face to face kind of conversation. So that would seem a really good effort, right, to get some young people involved in some of these conversations. So are you working?
Well,
in
you know,
that?
At the same time that you say that, you think about how young people are gravitating towards doing poetry slams.
Oh, true, yeah.
And doing work where they're using the power of words. So they want to be involved in some of these conversations, and they want to be critical about the societies that we live in, and they want to do that through poetry. The Historical Society has held poetry readings where a lot of the participants have been young people.
Hmm.
And it's the language, it's the ability to have a voice and to engage in public policy that we'd like to encourage. And that's also the role of Leadership South Coast, is building that whole middle level of potential.
Yeah, like many communities, when you go out to an event in which there's a community enterprise taking place, you see the same people, and all of us know that we need to do a better job of bringing others into the conversation. So, yeah, I've been engaged in Leadership South Coast for exactly that reason. And you'll see at the Mindy, you'll be a part of this conversation with Gloria Steinem, and you'll see some of the young women, from our community who will be, you know, part of that that night.
And they'll
be
high school students.
Yeah. And I don't want to say that they're all, it seems like, you know, a lot of them, because there are some very articulate, amazing young people we had on this show recently when we were talking about gun legislation
and
humanitarian rights and it really makes you so excited about the potential for the future that a lot of these kids you can sort of see they're going places.
And they also need mentors.
Yeah.
And they need people to help them understand how you maneuver and get involved in city politics, or how you maneuver to start social movements.
Right. Exactly. All right, so Gloria Steinem is the next speaker on Saturday, May 19th, but sold out. So you're going to have to get tickets from somebody who already has them.
That's right. Yes, that's right. Because Ace Tickets is not yet on our vendor list.
All right, and we'll have more information about the Lyceum at our website, capeandislands.org. Bob Unger from Unger LeBlanc Communications, Lee Blake, president of the New Bedford Historical Society. Thanks for coming in. So
thank
good
you.
Thanks
to see
so
both
much
of
for
you.
Having us.
Coming up after a break, in the shadow of extinction, we discuss WCAI's ongoing coverage of the North Atlantic right whale.